Unemployment is near record lows. The stock market is near record highs. But what is a booming economy for some is a bust for others. In its report released last month, the Wisconsin Poverty Project showed that the Eau Claire Chippewa Falls metropolitan area was second only to Milwaukee in the percentage of its population living in poverty. And United Way's Alice report shows that nearly half our population in western Wisconsin is just one crisis away from losing their home. Today on the West Side, we explore homelessness and housing insecurity, and some actions and remedies designed to improve things here in western Wisconsin. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Good to have you with us. Our guests today are Susan Wolfgram of Eau Claire. She co-chairs the Affordable Housing Task Force for the grassroots community justice organization JONA. That's an acronym for Joining Our Neighbors, Advancing Hope. Susan Wolfgram, welcome.
Thank you, Dean.
Jeannie Sem is the Housing Services Coordinator for Western Dairyland Economic Opportunity Council. It's a private community action agency which serves Buffalo, Eau Claire, Jackson, and Trempealeau counties. Jeannie Sem, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you.
And Chris Headland is Program Director and Director of Education at Hope Gospel Mission, which has been providing services for the homeless in Eau Claire for 20 years. Chris Headland, good to have you with us.
Good morning.
Later in the program, producer Catherine Thomas provides a feature report on the In-Town Hotel, which provides transitional housing for former prison inmates. We'll also hear about a new program for UW-Eau Claire students who have been foster children or have had housing insecurity. And as always, you're welcome to join the conversation. Call 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. And before we get into specific questions, let's establish which organizations are represented here and the perspectives your organization has on housing security. And Susan Wolfgram, let's start with you. What brought the JONA Affordable Housing Task Force into being?
Well, this past year, really, from our perspective, has been in Eau Claire the year of housing insecurity and an urgency of now. For about the past 5 years, we've had quite a bit of gentrification, like many cities across the nation have, with the development of the Confluence Project. And then with the Alice Report coming out in August of last year, as you referenced, with almost half of our neighbors experiencing housing insecurity, as well as Julian Emerson's article, which was a game changer as well, The Tale of Two Eau Claires, in September of last year, it really brought the community very much aware that there is real disparity between folks. And then the other thing that was a huge game changer was September 24th of last year. We had the first public hearing with City Council, and it was on affordable housing. And we packed the house with residents, neighbors in our city experiencing housing insecurity, and heard all of their lived experience. And that really fast-tracked City Council as well into the upcoming election to make housing insecurity and affordable housing the number one issue in our city.
Can you, we've referenced the Alice Report. Can we talk about what Alice is and what that's about?
Right. So Alice stands for Asset Limited Income Insecure. And that is based on a survival budget. I won't go into all of the details on that, but primarily Alice talks about, like you said, almost half of our residents being housing insecure and having overwhelming charges of child care, health care, and really one crisis away from not being able to pay their rent. And the one thing I just want to mention, if I could, is affordable housing generally is defined as not paying more than 30% of your income, including utilities, on housing. In Eau Claire, we only have a 2% vacancy rate. Our one bedrooms are about our efficiencies are about $540. A one bedroom is about $600+. A two bedroom is $800. Very, very few people in our community, about half our residents, cannot afford the rent.
Jeannie Sem, let's move to you. Talk about what Western Dairyland is exactly and what role it plays in housing for people in or near poverty.
Sure. Western Dairyland is a community action agency. We serve I believe you mentioned Buffalo, Eau Claire, Jackson, and Trempealeau counties. We do a needs assessment survey on, I believe it's every 3 years. And that survey is kind of designed to help us with future planning of our programs. Currently, you know, we have a lot of different programs that assist the income challenged in our area. But regarding to housing, in regards to housing, we have a homeless shelter program. We have shelters in Eau Claire for families. We have four different available units that we can place families into for 30 to 60 days. We also have units in our lower counties, so we have a total of 7 homeless shelters for families. We also operate a rapid rehousing program. What that basically does is assist those that are homeless by rapidly rehousing them, like providing funding for them so that they can get out of shelter or off the streets and into housing. And then the third program that we really run in regards to housing and homelessness is our permanent supportive housing program. That program targets just the chronically homeless who have some sort of disability. We actually provide 30 units right now of permanent supportive housing to those folks who are have a lot of issues, who have been homeless for a very long time, and who have mental health issues, substance abuse issues, or other things that are plaguing them from staying housed.
Talk, if you would, about your Housing First program. What's that about?
So Housing First is the model of Housing First is basically exactly what it says. The model believes in providing housing before providing a plethora of other services to individuals. So I think, what we have seen as evidenced in other communities and here in Wisconsin, we have noticed that, yes, by taking a person who's chronically homeless with all these problems, placing them into housing and being their first priority, and then addressing other issues like medical, health, transportation, whatever, it's a much higher success rate.
And Jeannie Sem, Western Dairylands also very involved in a multi-organizational effort called SPRINT.
Yes.
Can you explain what that is and where that process is right now?
Yeah. So Eau Claire was fortunate enough to, recruit, for the lack of a better word, an individual who comes from New York, who has experience in housing collaborations, like working collectively with the community in reaching all the housing goals.
Mm-hmm.
So she came in to our community. She kind of assessed all the different programs and the providers and how they're working together and had some suggestions about how we could move forward. Currently, yes, we're in the middle of a 100-day sprint. The goal of the first sprint is to house 16 chronically homeless by the end of July. We're close. We're up to 11. We have 6 left. And what we found, I think, from that sprint is that, agencies are working together a little bit more. People are talking more. I think there's a lot more collaboration.
So the hope is that it will, this sort of increased communication and understanding of one another will not only help those 16 people who are involved in this project, but probably help those organizations down the line communicate better.
Interesting. Absolutely.
Chris Hedlund, talk about the role Hope Gospel Mission plays in working with individuals who find themselves without a place to live.
So Hope Gospel Mission does a little bit different than some of the other agencies in town. We don't focus so much on the housing, but we try to help the individual who wants help with some root issues to break the cycle of poverty or get out of this situation. So for the person who has the root issues of maybe addiction or things like that, and they say, I need more than a place to live. I would like a team of people to come alongside me and help me change some things, give me a fresh start or a new beginning. Hope Gospel Mission is going to work with that person for, on average, a year and a half is how long someone stays with us. And we help them with different issues. For some people, all they need is housing. For some people, their main struggle is they can't afford a place because of the housing inventory doesn't have a lot of low-income availability. But for some people, they say, I need more than that. And that's the person that's going to come to Hope Gospel Mission. We're not a typical homeless shelter. A homeless shelter provides a meal and a shower and a bed for a night while you get back on your feet. A Hope Gospel Mission provides long-term, intensive, comprehensive help, unique to each person to help them with their needs get to where they want to be. And so in a sense, we're helping them overcome homelessness in a different way. But you don't have to be homeless to come to Hope Gospel Mission, although most are.
Yeah. One of the most visible things in Eau Claire, I think, as far as relating to this issue of homelessness is the Hope Gospel Mission's expansion project on North Claremont Avenue. Beautiful new building opened this spring. Talk about that expansion and what it says about the magnitude of need here in western Wisconsin.
Well, we wish the problem wasn't growing, but it is. And the building we had downtown was insufficient to keep up with the need. The building itself was failing, and it was inefficient and didn't provide for safety and things like that of our residents. We made that building do for 20 years, but we found after a period of time we had a waiting list for Hope Gospel Mission for the first time. I've been with the Hope Gospel Mission over 15 years, and in 14 of those years we did not have a waiting list. Mm. And suddenly, about a year ago, we found ourselves with over 40 people on it at one time. And that speaks to how fast the need is growing in Eau Claire. And so we had to build a building that would not only replace the failing building, but also accommodate some growth so that we could make sure we're helping those that need the type of help we offer.
Well, we're talking about changing, and Jeannie Semb, you've worked with Western Dairyland and Housing Services for 30 years now, right?
Yeah.
What changes have you observed during your career in regard to the rates of homelessness and housing insecurity?
I think that we're definitely looking at Susan mentioned the low 2% vacancy rate with apartments. I think that's unusually low. I think that we are struggling to find landlords in the community that are willing to rent to, you know, some of these folks who might have some issues. I think also over the years we've been able to collect data better to see kind of what the community is looking at. Who are we working with? What data trends are we seeing? How can we improve our programming to meet the needs of the community? So I guess that's
okay. Kind
of where, I mean, we've seen a lot of different trends over the years, but I do think that it's a much harder to serve clientele now than it used to be.
Hmm. Could I just follow up on what Jean and Chris said, Dean,
sure,
for just a minute? I think an important point to make is that it's not only about increasing affordable housing stock. What we're talking about is that it's also important to expand rental qualification criteria to be able to increase access. You can have all the stock you want, but if people are locked out, it's not going to help us. So we're talking about folks with conviction histories, eviction histories. You can have one eviction because you lost your job and it changes the trajectory of your life. It's low income, it's credit history, it's multiple things. And that's why we know that we need supports for landlords, which Jeannie, could speak to better than I, in order for them to be able to take a risk on people with rental barriers.
We're exploring homelessness and housing insecurity in western Wisconsin and some short-term and long-term remedies that are available. Our guests are Jeannie Semb of Western Dairyland Economic Opportunity Council, Chris Headland of Hope Gospel Mission and Susan Wolfgram of Jonah's Affordable Housing Task Force. Later in the show, we'll hear about a new program at UW-Eau Claire for students who have experienced housing, insecurity and foster care. But next, we'll have producer Catherine Thomas report on a housing option for prison inmates transitioning to freedom. Your calls are welcome. Are you a landlord? And if so, do you feel an obligation to take on renters who may have a background of homelessness? Have you experienced housing insecurity yourself? What's your story? Call us at 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbeck. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. Housing insecurity in western Wisconsin is our topic today on The West Side. We'll be back with our guests in a bit, but first, we look at a special housing opportunity that is reserved specifically for ex-prison inmates. Catherine Thomas took a tour of Eau Claire's In-Town Hotel.
And so there's 25 men that live here, and they share this space, living room, dining room.
Terry Butler gives me a tour of the In-Town Hotel in Eau Claire. After teaching at the Stanley Correctional Institute, Butler wanted to help men successfully reenter society after incarceration. Identifying housing as a key factor, she purchased the In-Town Hotel.
Well, it's an old building. It's been here a long time. It's on the corner of Putnam and Wisconsin Street, right across from Banbury Place. So there's a lot of traffic here, a lot of trucks going to Banbury Place. We've got a small yard, and one of the men that lives here, Zach, has helped me build a little vegetable bed and put in some plants and... We just put in a bird feeder out front, and there's quite a bit of action with the birds. So, but it's an old hotel with 25 rooms and a shared space.
The In-Town provides men with housing, but Butler wants the hotel to address more than homelessness.
So my focus is more on men coming out of incarceration than just coming out of homelessness. Men that are about three-quarters of the way to putting things together, they're sober, they've got a plan, and they just need to start putting it all together.
She says men with criminal records have unique challenges when they look for a place to live.
So housing's a big part because so many landlords don't talk to the people. They look at, they look at their record, and if there's a, criminal charge against them, they won't rent to them. So I think by the men living here for a while, I can give them a good rental reference, and that'll help on that end.
How long a man stays at the In-Town can vary from months in most cases to years in a few cases. Butler sees the hotel as a temporary stop for men with a plan.
Yeah, it's definitely transitional, but it's when they come here, I like them to have been involved in a... treatment program, or they have a job, and they're it's just the last few pieces that can be pretty vital of making it happen and getting on your own two feet.
Unlike nonprofit organizations like Hope Gospel Mission, Family Promise, and Catholic Charities, the In-Town is a solely private entity funded by the weekly rent residents pay. Those residents contribute in other ways too.
I think the big difference, the model for the In-Town is that these guys are constantly contributing to this house to make it work with their rent and staying sober and sticking to a plan. I think if you have government money, it might complicate things. If you have grants, it might complicate things. So I like not having those rules involved with what we're doing here.
While Butler follows political developments involving the criminal justice system and homelessness, she finds the greatest opportunities for progress at the local level.
I think Eau Claire is in a place where we could actually figure it out. I think a lot of it has to come from the ground up. It has to be grassroots. It has to be a lot of connections between some of the very successful businesses here that we're glad they're here. We're glad things are being fixed up, but there needs to be some kind of tax that will help with affordable housing. So I think things that come down from the state or the federal government are always should be looked at and useful, but they're not going to solve everything. It's something that we've got to figure out right here in Eau Claire.
Butler herself has future plans for figuring out affordable housing and related issues beyond the in-town. She hopes to offer a similar housing option for women one day. She also plans to open a dry lounge in Eau Claire where men can socialize and relax in a space separate from work, meetings, and home. Meanwhile, Terry Butler will continue to manage the in-town, hoping to make a difference in the lives of ex-prisoners.
It's really hard to completely change your life around and have a new set of views and ideas and goals. And so, if you can help just a couple of people, then that's good.
From Eau Claire, I'm Catherine Thomas for Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you, Catherine. Jeannie Semb, I found it interesting that a primary goal for Terry Butler's work at the In-Town Hotel is to give those former prisoners a positive housing reference to help them find permanent housing. With this tight housing market, how much are landlords paying attention to references for their tenants?
A lot. They definitely are looking at references. They're looking at prior, evictions. They have to. It's a business.
Yeah.
They do take those things into consideration.
So what's the answer to that, Susan Wolfgram, if it's a tight market and these sorts of things, if you're a landlord, it's your money on the line?
Well, through the sprint cycle and in other conversations in our city, we've talked about things like risk mitigation funds for landlords, a tenant curriculum that's going to be put into place soon. We have one landlord who I think is a great example, John DeRosa, who actually will listen to a person's story before making a decision on evictions or a conviction history. That, of course, takes much longer to do that. And when you only have a 2% vacancy rate, landlords simply don't have to take that risk. So we have to try to appeal to all of us are in one community and to be able to help each other out as well.
We're talking about homelessness and housing insecurity in western Wisconsin. We invite you to join the conversation at 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. Our guests are Chris Hedlund from Hope Gospel Mission, Jeannie Semb from Western Dairyland, and from the Affordable Housing Task Force of Jonah, we have Susan Wolfgram. And we do have a caller on the line. Vern from Boyd is calling in. Vern, thanks for waiting.
That's okay,
ahead.
Dean.
Go ahead.
Okay. What we basically have is income, wealth inequality. That's one issue, okay? But our housing went down the tube with the Uniform Dwelling Code in 1980. And then we got all these people, Western Dairyland, all these other people, studying the housing, assisting people. All you have to do is go back to 1979, and I told Ron Kine we could build a mobile home factory here. I have a new design for mobile homes and low-cost housing. And, it would cost maybe $1 billion, but we can increase the housing. But, see, they have all these rules, and it got through HUD. And I'm going to make a case for a person because of a HUD rule, and I won't name the person. Okay, this person's husband died, okay? She has no income. He didn't sign a form so you can get housing assistance. Well, you can't sign it when you're dead. And she has a teenage son. And they will not make an exception at the state or county level. And I'll say, Mr. Kine worked on this for like 2 months, and they got nothing done. So they should have called, HUD or something like that. Mm-hmm. But you have all these, we have too many rules on housing. We don't need all these people working like Western Dairyland. We went through them, never again,
right.
A whole bunch of them. But we can increase the housing, but we got the rules where the realtors make, a fortune. The banks are involved. Everybody wants to make money. And Reagan privatized the housing market. He gave it to corporations. But like I said, the dwelling codes, they're international now. You can't build a house. We have lack of materials because China ate up the materials market.
Okay, Vern, thank you. And the issue there being, you know, there are too many rules in place. And Jeannie Semb, is that your, you know, is that an obstacle to housing? Is too many rules in place?
It can be. Definitely it can be. Yes.
What kind of rules might get in the way there?
So I guess having to be governed by fair market rent for the area, that's sometimes difficult to meet that criteria. Eligibility guidelines might make it difficult.
Now, Vern mentioned mobile homes, and mobile homes have been in the news in the last couple of weeks in Eau Claire. Four residents of the Maples Mobile Home Park faced removal from their homes if their sewer hookup was not repaired. Now, fortunately, some local plumbers pitched in efforts to help repair those broken hookups. But State Representative Jody Emerson, who was on the scene, says that sewer issue is just one of many poor living conditions residents of that park face. She cited mold, constant flooding of driveways, roofs that bend under the pressure of heavy snowfalls. Susan Wolfgram, if you would, do you often come across people who've been forced out of their homes because of poor housing conditions?
Well, specific to Maples, our task force has been the advocates for the residents in Maples. Since last year, and particularly since January, we've been having meetings with the city in terms of what to do regarding holding the owners accountable for really what I would consider what Jody described as developing world conditions. No one in our city should have to live under those conditions, but these folks, like what we've referenced previously, are locked into that housing. Again, with conviction histories, eviction histories. We had a very productive meeting with the city just this past Friday, where we have some specific next steps that we're going to be pursuing. Two grassroots leaders emerged out of this situation within the Maples community who actually live there, Emily Shields and Dre Green, and they have been leading this effort again along with the city and our task force. And one thing I can say that I think represents that community is that these homes in that community will not last another winter.
For decades now, city planners and city government work to pump new energy into the downtown area. And in the past 10 years, that's finally happened with the developments around Phoenix Park and the confluence of the Eau Claire and Chippewa Rivers, and there's more development of riverfront property planned for the Cannery District. All that has drawn people and business back to downtown, which is great. So, Susan Wolfgram, that's been good for the economy. Why have these housing security issues persisted within that context?
Well, I think it's a number of things. But one thing is the difference between understanding gentrification in an area and understanding revitalization. When you gentrify, you don't really have a consciousness of displacing residents, and you're mostly interested in property valuation. When you want to revitalize, your intent is not to displace, but to be able to maintain the culture and the unique diversity of that neighborhood and intentionally try to make it affordable. So, for instance, with the Cannery right now, we're talking about a TID proposal. Where developers would...
A tax incremental district.
Exactly, would be given incentives to be able to develop in that area. But it's a both and. I think, you know, I live downtown. I live in what could be considered a luxury apartment. I love all the amenities of downtown, but I also want my neighbors to be able to experience quality of life as well. And there is a way to do both. And I just want to end this piece by saying that the Chippewa Valley Affordable Housing Task Force, which is our regional task force, has finalized today, actually this morning, 42 recommendations of how we can increase stock and access to affordable housing in our area.
Without getting into all 42, what are the highlights of that?
So when we talk about rules that get in the way, developers, you know, will often tell us that zoning issues are a big issue, a big barrier. And already the city of Eau Claire is expanding zoning. Developers will also talk about, you would think that construction costs are the biggest barrier, but what developers tell us is that it's the neighbors. It's what's called that NIMBY effect, not in my backyard. So, for instance, our task force works with neighbors in a surrounding development to be able to get their support of an affordable housing development.
We're talking about homelessness and housing insecurity here in western Wisconsin. And we return to talk about that with our guest Chris Hedlund of Hope Gospel Mission, Susan Wolfgram of the Affordable Housing Task Force of Jonah, and Jeannie Semb of the Western Dairyland Economic Opportunity Council. Coming up next, though, we hear from a UW-Eau Claire student and staff member who are spearheading a new program to help students coming out of foster care and housing insecurity. Your calls are welcome. Share your questions, comments, or stories with our guests and with our audience at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. It's the West Side. I'm Dean Kallenbach on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on the West Side talking about housing insecurity. Last week, UW-Eau Claire announced a new program called Fostering Success. Angie Swenson-Holzinger is Associate Director of the Advising, Retention, and Career Center, who was working on that idea as part of a faculty staff leadership project. Taz Smith is a second-year student who is exploring the idea as part of a service learning project. They found each other, and fostering success is the result. For Taz Smith, that interest came from personal experience.
Yes, so I was in the foster care system at the age of 14 up until I aged out just last year on my 18th birthday. I grew up in a home with a mother who was an alcoholic and a father who was absent but also heavily into drugs, and several siblings. Stability wasn't necessarily something that was a gift to either of us. College wasn't really something that was ever on our minds because we didn't think it was possible. I am also a first generation. My parents didn't go to college and my siblings also didn't complete college. So for me, not only did I graduate high school, I made it to college. And so I wanted to do something that was something that I could be proud of, because I have made it this far. I give myself another goal. And so my goal was to have a program like this so that when I eventually do graduate from college, I can essentially have a legacy behind me that will also impact other students.
Wow. Heavy stuff. Congratulations. Good for you. Let's talk a little bit about the program itself and what it is you're trying to do with it. Taz, can you explain a little bit how, you know, what is the fostering success as far as what it supplies to people who are in situations like you found yourself in coming into school?
Yep. So fostering success is essentially a group of not only faculty, but myself, who would like to provide support for the students, the foster care students and the homeless students who don't necessarily have that support system, so that they come here. You know, when I came, I felt alone. I felt like I didn't have anyone who knew my, you know, who related to me or who could ever relate to me. And so I don't ever want any other student to feel like that. I want them to know that there is a group that cares for them. There are people on campus that are like them, even though they, you know, they don't walk around and tell it publicly. There are people just like them, and they have a support system. And that's essentially what I wanted the program to be. I wanted that program to kind of fill, not necessarily fill the void that their families may have left them with, but to be there for them so that they know that they're not here alone, on this journey alone, because college can be stressful, especially as a freshman. And in this situation, you're coming in not knowing what you're getting yourself into, not even knowing that you would be able to make it here. And so it's a stressful opportunity. So we would like to kind of relieve some of that stress. So instead of them worrying about how they're going to get soap and how they're going to get toothbrush and toothpaste and all of those simple necessities. They can worry about, you know, who's ordering the pizza tonight, you know, whose room are we watching the movie sure. in, who, you know, friends and things, you know, things you should be able to enjoy college.
Yeah, the things college students are supposed to be worrying about.
Right.
Yeah. Angie Swenson-Holzinger, doesn't financial aid fill gaps for students who don't have a direct financial means to attend the university?
Yeah, with students who are qualifying maybe as independent or things like that, they will tend to have, you know, a fair amount of financial aid, but the university is still a pretty expensive place, and there's still a lot of things that we assume a lot of times that families are going to provide. And so Taz was alluding to some of, like, the personal toiletries and things like that. When a student comes in to the fall into their first residence hall room, they need to have bedding. They need to have, you know, simple things like shower shoes and towels, and those things are maybe not going to be things that are provided. So that's one of the things that we're working on as our first initiative with Fostering Success, is putting together welcome baskets, which are very practically going to be in laundry baskets, because that's another thing that students need, with all of those necessities that a student might typically have from their families, that a student who's a former foster student or a homeless student without that family support, no one might be providing that for them.
Now, Taz, you're obviously, at least to me in the few minutes we've met, pretty confident individual who understands what her situation is and mm-hmm. understands how to better her situation. Do you think students in general, though, would be willing to accept this help, or would they be concerned that their peers may learn that they're involved in Fostering Success and may back off and say, hey, mm-hmm. you know, I'm okay on my own?
Right. And we've thought about that, and I've thought about that myself. But the way that I look at it is, this is support for you in the now to get to where you want to be in the future. If it's something that you have to do now, so be it. But it's not, it's going to be something to help you to get to where you want to be in the future. And that's the way that I look at it.
And we've talked about very intentionally structuring the program to be fairly discreet, so that students who are receiving the welcome baskets, it's not a public thing that they have to disclose to others unless they choose to. One of the other pieces that we're really careful about is that students don't have to continuously retell their story. Taz has been very open about her yeah. story and is willing to share her story, but for many students, having to retell their story again and again can be very traumatic. And so not wanting the students to have to do that, the Fostering Success is trying to create a network around campus where once we know they're connected to our program, we can just simply say, hey, I'll get you connected to this person, and they'll just help you meet your needs in financial aid or whatever area that might be without having to ask a lot more questions and be intrusive about your personal experience.
That's the voice of UW-Eau Claire's Angie Swenson-Holzinger. We also heard from student Taz Smith. They're working together on UW-Eau Claire's Fostering Success program. An estimated 100 UW-Eau Claire students, either incoming or current students, have experienced foster care or housing insecurity. Cash donations are welcome, and the program is also looking for volunteer board members. Let's return to our live guests as we talk about homelessness and housing insecurity. Susan Wolfgram of Eau Claire is the co-chair of the Affordable Housing Task Force for the grassroots community justice organization JONA. That's an acronym for Joining Our Neighbors, Advancing Hope. Jeannie Samb is Housing Services Coordinator for Western Dairyland Economic Opportunity Council, a private community action agency which serves Buffalo, Eau Claire, Jackson, and Trempealeau counties. And Chris Headland is Program Director and Director of Education at Hope Gospel Mission, which has been providing services for the homeless in Eau Claire for 20 years. Let's, Chris Headland, fold you back into this conversation and talk a little bit more about homelessness. Let's talk first about specific short-term options for homeless individuals. I know that Hope Gospel offers a 30-day program. Talk about what that entails.
At Hope Gospel Mission, we have a short-stay opportunity for those who do not want or do not need long-term help. If somebody is sober and willing to follow our rules, they can stay with us for a short time while they look for a place to stay or look for a job or whatever their need is. Not everyone needs or wants long-term programming, and so we try to offer that opportunity for those that that's all they really need or want at this time.
And what about longer-term options then? What do those look like at Hope Gospel Mission?
If somebody wants to stay with us for the long term, then we want to help them have that fresh start on life. So we're going to dig into areas such as their academics, their addictions, their finances, life skills, mental health, nutrition, fitness, spirituality, employment. We're going to find out What are their goals in those areas? What are their strengths and their weaknesses? And then how can we put together a plan to help them achieve who they want to be in all those different areas? And then how can we come alongside them during that time to help them reach those goals?
And Jeannie Sem, Western Dairyland, of course, has some long-term options as well. Do those focus that you've mentioned already, housing first, rapid rehousing, do those also focus on helping people to sort of rebuild parts of their resume, perhaps, or parts of who they are so that they're more ready to step into the open housing market?
Yeah, absolutely. We have case managers that provide very intensive case management services, and they address the different areas that they may need assistance with, whether it be securing employment or some sort of income, applying for mainstream benefits, making sure that their kids are in school, things like that. So, yeah, we definitely address all of those different areas.
And different housing programs have different approaches to where they're able to house people. Shelters offer concentrated on-site housing, like the one we talked about, Hope Gospel Mission just opened on North Claremont in Eau Claire. But other programs like Housing First place people in housing scattered throughout the community. What difference does location of housing make for the people who live there, Jeannie Sem?
I think it's important to integrate some of these folks into the community. I think studies have shown that running scattered site locations for Housing First has been much more productive, much more successful when you can integrate perhaps like a low-income family into a duplex with a affluent family. I think that they're able to learn from their neighbors. I think that they're able to just gain a lot more knowledge of rentals, lots of different things.
Sure. Chris Hedlund, Hope Gospel Mission's name broadcast its religious foundation. Many other shelters also have affiliations with Christian organizations in Eau Claire. Sojourner House is part of Catholic Charities. Family Promise of the Chippewa Valley is a partnership of various religious congregations in the city. How does religion inform the work of Hope Gospel Mission, and how does that approach differ than from what a nonprofit, private, or government approach would be?
We do what we do because we believe what we believe, but we don't require other people to believe that to get services from us. So we don't require anyone to be a Christian to come in. We don't require anyone to be a Christian to complete our program, but we do create a faith-based environment. We believe that that's a nice, healthy, healing, safe space. Even though they're not required to believe what we believe, we see benefits in having a stable, faith-based environment for them to live in. We do pray before we eat. We go to church on Sunday mornings, but a person's not required to buy into that to go through our program.
And interestingly, the organizations that we have represented here, religious organization, a private organization like Western Dairyland that is, that does use some grants to help, but it's not a government agency. And of course, Jonah, which is more of a grassroots community-based approach. The State Assembly has passed by unanimous vote a bill designed to reinforce resources for homeless individuals. Now, that bill was introduced by a large group of Republican representatives, including from Western Wisconsin, Trey Pranchinsky of Mondovi, Warren Petrick of Oliva, James Edming of Glen Flora, Jesse James of Altoona, and State Senator Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls is also a co-sponsor on the Senate side. Here's what it includes: $1 million increase in a state grant for shelters, adding performance metrics to encourage stable housing, money for program connecting homeless people with landlords. It requires the state task force development agencies to consider homeless people for work, and it doubles the grant for skills education for homeless people. Susan Wolfgram, from what you know of this, is this a good start, and is this a role government should be playing?
I think it's a good start. I think that this is a very diverse effort. I also believe that we cannot rely on faith-based organizations, that our government has a social contract with all of its citizens to provide for basic quality of life services. Not everyone agrees with that, but I most definitely support this. Absolutely. Yes.
So, Susan Wolfgram, as we move toward the last few minutes of our program, Jonah's Housing Affordability Task Force continues to push for efforts to improve the situation in Eau Claire. What's next for your organization?
So, July 22nd at City Council at the Monday public hearing, we're encouraging everyone who is committed and invested in affordable housing, particularly those with lived experience and rental barriers, to come and speak in front of the council, to speak to the capital improvements 2020 to 2024 budget and advocate for dollars for affordable housing to be put into the 2020 budget and not delayed until 2022, that we have an urgency of now. Usually the capital budget, I would say 80 to 90% of it is about physical replacements of things, but we have a responsibility to our people as well. And that's what we're advocating for July 22nd.
And what is there a specific understanding of what that money would be used for?
Yes. There are many, many things. The Chippewa Valley Affordable Housing Task Force, again, is forwarding a number of ideas, even if it would be, let's just use a number of $200,000 for 2020. You could use that for landlord incentives in terms of affordable housing development to help them with things like asbestos removal, reducing their barriers to development. We have many, many ideas that we can talk about.
Jeannie Sam, Western Dairyland, is deeply involved in the Eau Claire Sprint effort, as we talked about earlier. That's that effort to house 16 homeless individuals in 100 days. Talk about that process, where it stands, but what happens after Sprint?
So the end of July marks the end of the first Sprint. I know that there is a meeting being scheduled for September, I believe, there's a meeting to reconvene so that we can talk about what was beneficial in the sprint, what was helpful, what didn't work, what can we do as a community together, like what should we focus on next. So that's coming up, I believe, in early September.
Very good. And Chris Hedlund, Hope Gospel Mission, has opened that new facility on North Claremont Avenue we've referenced. That's a facility for men. You have another new facility planned for women and children. Where does that project stand?
We are finishing a capital campaign right now to serve women with children. Women with children is the fastest growing demographic of homelessness in Eau Claire, and we feel that's the next thing for us to help address for that woman with children who need more than just the shelter, but again, those that want the holistic, comprehensive plan and for that team to come alongside them and help them get back on their feet and have that fresh start.
Very good. We thank our guests for today. They are Jeannie Semb of Western Dairyland Economic Opportunity Council, Chris Hedlund of Hope Gospel Mission, and Susan Wolfgram of Jonah's Affordable Housing Task Force. Thanks also to Terry Butler of the InTown Hotel and Taz Smith and Angie Swenson-Holzinger of UW Eau Claire's Fostering Success Program for being a part of the program earlier. Catherine Thomas produced today's show. Mort Cypress is our on-air producer. Ali Schulze and Kate Spranger provided the publicity. And John Davis is our digital content journalist. Next week, we talk about volunteer firefighting and emergency service personnel in our region. We'll investigate the motivations and challenges faced by those volunteers and look at how it works for rural communities in western Wisconsin. So we hope you can join us next week for that, rural firefighters or volunteer firefighters and emergency service personnel. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.